Blog Talk Radio.
This is PWT Talks NXT for March 12th, 2024. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg. You can check the things out I do at natelindberg.com. And here to talk some NXT with me is Dr. Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, what's going on, man?
Hey, everybody. I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee253. And my report for tonight's show is up at the Torch and the VIP side for you to look over in case you wanted my detailed written thoughts or if you haven't been able to look over or watch the show yet.
Yes, yes. And I will be using your report tonight to go through the show and talk a little bit about it and kind of use it as a guide to guide through the course of the night here. So we had a main event match. We had a main event segment. We'll talk about the segment first because, well, that was really the main event of the night, guys. Really the main event of the night. Trick Williams returns to NXT. Well, he returned last week to NXT, but tonight he comes out to actually address the crowd for the first time since NXT Vengeance Day and address Mello and everything. I think he did a great job delivering this this promo. Comes out and basically just recaps the entire feud between he and Carmelo Hayes going all the way back to NXT 2.0, starting in the shadow of Carmelo Hayes, watching Carmelo Hayes get all of his accolades. And he was always happy for his friend. He was always happy to see his friend, succeed. But that wasn't necessarily reciprocated from Carmelo Hayes, which he points out, through the course of his promo. We also then saw Metaphor come out, which saw the four of them come out and try to poke the bear with Trick Williams. Which looks like it's going to probably set up a match next week between he and Noam Dar. But Bruce, what did you think of this segment? And right now, Trick Williams, I think he's probably the hottest act in NXT. What do you think?
Might not just be the hottest act in NXT, but as Noam Dar said, might just be the hottest act in general. Yeah. There's no one hotter out there, right? So I'm just going to get this out of the way. The two promo segments, in-ring promo segments we saw tonight from the two people who we are expecting to be given the responsibility of carrying the brand after standing delivered through the summer, Roxanne Perez and Trick Williams, I thought did a fine job tonight in both of their segments. Here with Trick, the first half talking about his journey, his story with Carmelo Hayes, I really just appreciate that he gave us levels, right? He started out talking about their brothers, and as a brother, this is what it means to me. I'll take food off my table to make sure you're fed. Going through how he's always there for Carmelo, and that he was happy whenever Carmelo succeeded, but seeing Carmelo succeed made him want to do more to succeed as well, and that's when he went to go see Shawn Michaels. It was never about him trying to take Carmelo's spot. It was him trying to succeed more to help Carmelo out, essentially, so it's not all the burden was placed on him. And he said, that's when Trick Willie was born, and Carmelo really couldn't take that. And he lied straight to his face when he asked him if he was the one who attacked him in the back several months ago, because he had heard the whispers and didn't want to believe. But once John Cena told him, then he's like, you know what, maybe I will ask him, that thing. And after the attack, he knew that for him, it was over. And when Carmelo said he's not on the same level, I really liked how he said, you're right, we're not on the same level. You'll never be on the same level as me with your little punk ass. And I just kind of thought that really popped the crowd. And then you get Metaphor coming out. And last week when we saw, I think it was last week, when Noam Dar was in the back, and then he just all of a sudden popped up and he was fine, said we're on to bigger and better things. We were thinking championships. Okay, we were off, because it looks like what he's talking about is going after the person that might not have a title, but is the person that is making the most hype, has the most heat in a good way behind him, has the most crowd pops. And from that sense, it's justified for him to go after Trick Williams. And I believe that they have had at least one match in the past as well. So,
yeah, I think so.
To me, yeah. The big news coming out of this, of course, was that at the end, he took out Dar and Mensa, and then Lash went to punch him, He blocks her punch and then kind of held her in his arms, and then they went and then they started kissing, and everybody was shocked. The crowd popped bigger for that than anything else throughout the whole night. And then he kind of gently put Lash aside so he can take care of Dara Mensa again. And so there's an added wrinkle here of the whole Legend Williams thing. And Trick did set it up earlier in the night, earlier in the promo segment, when after Dara mentioned he's the hottest thing the hottest thing around, he said, "Well, judging by the look on, or judging by how Lash Legend's looking at him, yeah, you're right." And she was like, oh my goodness. But I think that's kind of what set up the kiss at the end. So, you know, what the match is going to be, at this point, it has to be the main event of Stand and Deliver. But I like how they're keeping Trick between now and then, because you don't need Melo on the show necessarily. And it makes more sense for this character, Melo, to wait to be off the show or to wait to be until Stand and Deliver to appear again. Or even if he does appear, it wouldn't be something like Trick where he's getting a huge segment, or it might be more of a barbershop kind of thing like we had last week. So having him involved with Metaphor, I think, is a good stopgap. And then there's also, like, we've been discussing Lash Legend's improvement for a while now, how it just keeps coming and coming, not just few and far between, but week to week, she keeps getting better and better in the ring. And I wonder if they're looking at that too, and using that to kind of move her into a higher position, because if you're going to be paired with Trick Williams, as great as Metaphor is, Trick Williams is higher up the card. And that's why they're attacking him, right? So that's a bit of intrigue for me, is how they're going to resolve this Legend Trick Williams thing. But I think overall this was a really good main event segment to end the show. Not every show needs to be, you know, a home run. I felt like this was a really good show, a lot of storytelling involved. This main event was a great way to send the fans home happy and keep you intrigued on what's coming up between, not just between now and Stand and Deliver, but on the week to week. I think they're doing a really good job of ensuring Stand and Deliver has the hype behind it, but also that they're not neglecting what happens every Tuesday night.
No, I'd agree. I'd agree with you there. You know, with Lash Legend, you know, I think one thing that really served her in her favor was when she was able to just step right in after Shotzi got hurt, like a month or so ago, mm-hmm. during that title match. Yeah, I think that really probably like said wonders for her backstage. You know, the confidence they have for her is like, I'm really, really pleased with like the just overall growth we've seen out of her since she started. It's been insane. But yeah, you know, I think you're right. This match is probably, it has to main event. Like, obviously it's not for the title, and I obviously like, I kind of like to see the title main event, a pay-per-view, but I was thinking about this earlier tonight. I don't remember the last time I was so invested in a story, and I think that might have been like in NXT anyway, and I think that might have been Gargano Ciampa. Like, I think this might be one of the best stories they've told since then. You know, it's 2 years in the making. It's you know, long-term storytelling, and you know, we're finally coming to a head here. I thought it was going to be for the title. You know, I've gone on record of saying that many times at this point, but at the same time, at this point, I don't think it necessarily needs the title. You know, Dragunov, he's been in and out of the feud between, you know, with these two. He's moving on, and which is kind of why I thought we may wind up with him here. You're coming up at Stand and Deliver, you know, like a triple threat between, you know, he, Trick, and Melo. But, you know, now he's obviously doing something with Tony D'Angelo, which we'll talk about in a little bit. I don't think this match necessarily needs the title, and I don't see how you can't, like, the NXT title match or the women's title match, I mean, it's not going to be able to go on after this. It's, you know, it's going to get overshadowed. So this has to be the main event as far as I'm concerned. Let's go over to emails here. 515-605-9345 is our phone number. You can always press 1 to let me know you'd like to talk. Otherwise, you just sit there and listen to the live show if you'd like. if you're not listening to us on the recording. We don't have anybody. We got a few people listening. Nobody looking to talk right now. So perfect time to jump in if you'd like to do so. So we'll head over to emails, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, which Kevin sent one in to us tonight. Kevin says, "Salutations, gents. Hope this email finds you well. Woohoo! Am I the only one excited to see Mighty Mouse Thea Hale back in action? All I can say is it's about time. That said, it looks seems like the women's division is far more muddy than it has been in the past in terms of how they stack to get in line for a chance at Lyra. There seems to be far more lateral fighting between the ladies and vertical fighting, and the contenders like Blair Davenport are seemingly not at that level anymore. What can y'all make of it? Can we get a special women's wrestling check-in with Harley? Lastly, is there a universe where the Good Brothers beat the War Dogs? War Dogs? It's not War Dogs. What is it? Wolf Dogs.
Wolf Dogs.
He wrote War Dogs. Beat the Wolf Dogs and hold the titles for a while. Absent that, are they even a big enough name to give Braun and Breaker a significant rub? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to AYB. Office hours are now over. Professor Kevin Peek Tanny. So, Thea Hale back in action. So glad to see it. So glad to see it. Just to watch her do the Ultimate Warrior thing with the rope and then run around the ring. Like, it was great. It was great. Glad to see her back. The women's division, yeah, I'm curious to see where they kind of go here with the women's title anyway in Lyra. Obviously, you know, she's kind of out with an injury right now. She's more than likely going to be back before Stand and Deliver. And I say injury, kayfabe injury. It's going to be Roxanne Perez in her Stand and Deliver. I'm almost positive at this point. After that, I mean, Kiana James, sure. But, you know, she also feels kind of watered down right now. Is there anybody that you can kind of think of, other than Lash Legend, because you know, we were just kind of talking about, how she's been able to step up. Is there anybody that you can think of right now that can kind of fill that role?
The thing with the women's division right now is it's so obvious that it's going to be Roxanne Perez, that everyone else is kind of being paired off into either pairs or as actual tag teams, right? So, unless you want to just really quickly build up someone like Kalani Jordan, who isn't really involved in anything, although I guess after this you could say that she has something with Kiana James and Izzy Dame, because it seems like they are the ones who attacked her before the match tonight. It really just seems like, you know, once they get to Roxanne Perez being the champion again after Stand and Deliver, that's when they're going to go back to really building up the singles division in terms of anyone else out of these pairings who may not end up being a tag team, or someone like, you know, you could do something with Kiana James again, where even if she's not quite always a singles wrestler, she's still mainly a singles wrestler, with Izzy Dame being more of her enforcer, and when they do need to have a tag team match, she can't be there. But as of right now, and again, I'm not really up to date on who's been signed, anything like that. I'm not looking at a roster, but unless you bring someone back all of a sudden, like a Wendy Chu, who can just kind of get the pop and is someone fresh and new, then I'm looking at something like another Battle Royal, or maybe a little mini tournament like they're doing right now with the tag teams coming out of Stand and Deliver to determine who Roxanne Perez faces next. But I just think it's so obvious that it's her that there's really no need to build anyone else up right now. Tatum Pax is the only other person, but that's because she's been involved with Lyra, and because she's been involved with Lyra, that also means that she's being involved with Roxanne Perez because of what Roxanne Perez did to Lyra Bacteria last week. So, yeah, in that regard, right now, I'd say don't fret. It's just all set up for Roxanne Perez. So if it's still this muddled a few weeks after Stand and Deliver, then I think you can be a little concerned.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And then is there a universe the Good Brothers beat the Wolf Dogs and hold titles for a while? I'm not opposed to it. And I've gone on record on the show saying that in the past. Like, yeah, sure, you know, OC, they've been defined down quite a bit in WWE, but NXT isn't the main roster. We can, you know, you can kind of tell a story down in NXT that, you know, they're coming from the main roster, so obviously they're going to be a little bit stronger than the, you know, developmental talent in NXT, if you will. So I think they could tell that story. I think it makes sense. Like, with Bron Breakker on the trajectory he is right now on the main roster, like, I can't see him pulling double duty in NXT for much longer, especially past Stand and Deliver. So, to me, I feel like it makes sense to get the titles off of him and Baron Corbin, and you know, give the Good Brothers a little bit of a run with the belts for a bit. You know, maybe pretty short term or something like that. You know, then they could drop them to somebody like OTM or, you know, a Nofe and Blade or something like that. Bruce, on the Good Brothers.
Can they? Yeah, they definitely can. We've seen other teams come in before and like the New Day and win the titles, even if at the time they weren't at the top of the game in terms of how they were booked. Now, do I think it's going to happen? No. I think that I really haven't paid too much attention at what teams are involved here, but I don't think that, I mean, I guess if it's the other four teams they showed, it might, they look like they might have the most credibility in terms of
You've got the No Quarter Catch crew, you've got Axiom and Frazier, you get the LWO and the Good Brothers, you know, and so I'm kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. For going off game value and whatnot, they definitely have it.
Yeah,
I don't think Axiom and Frazier haven't built up enough to be able to definitively say, yeah, they're going to be the champion. Because let's be fair to Corbin and Breakker, and I think we have been since they've been a team. They mesh well together, and the crowd likes them. So you have to give that rub to a team that you think is going to be there for a bit. And look, if you're not doing anything with the Good Brothers, may as well have them down there and use all those accomplishments they discussed in their promo tonight and work with younger tag teams and give them experience. And, you know, Carl Anderson could even get a little singles run while they're down there because, as Kelly and I like to bring up, he's a former G1 finalist. So he has singles value in him as well. I would just like, if they do stay in NXT, to try and tamp down on their penchant, their seeming need to just have goofy promos and do goofy stuff. Just, there's times you can do that, but I want them to be a more serious team in NXT and not get sucked into doing all those, you know, like even tonight they were doing all their little mannerisms and facial gestures and things like that to make it a little more comedic, and I want them to be a more serious team, because when they are one of those serious teams, as we saw in Japan specifically, they are a force to be dealt with, and there's more legitimacy behind them when they do have that sort of air of seriousness, air of aggression behind them. So I would like to see that if they do stay. And yeah, I guess there really isn't another team in the tournament that I would say, I mean, you can either do it. I guess there are two ways of looking at this, right? You can either give it to the established team who may not need it, but can help the tag team division and keep them moving forward, or you just decide to take a chance on a younger, up-and-coming team and give it to them, right? Give them the rub and see if they can run with it. Not saying that that's necessarily what they'll do, but it's a possibility. I still think if you're looking at it, then they're odds on favorite probably to be the one to do it, because I've said on the show before that I think they're going to lose at Stand and Deliver the title. The Wolf Dogs will lose the title at Stand and Deliver, and then the next night during the Andre, because I assume that it's going to be on the first night that Breakker eliminates Corbin to officially signal the end of their tag team. And then Corbin, because he's discussed before how he's had the most fun and the most success this run on NXT, you could keep him there while you put Breaker specifically and keep him on SmackDown with Adam Pearce, or not Adam Pearce, Nick Aldis, and give him a nice run there that they've been doing with these little squash matches. But that's probably the path I think they will go. And so, yeah, Good Brothers make the most sense, even though if you would have told me that, I mean, just 2 weeks ago, if you would have told me Tony D'Angelo would be main eventing Sand Deliver and the Good Brothers would possibly be the next tag team champion, I would have just been like, okay, what am I smoking? It definitely isn't the good stuff, because what is going on?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that myself. Like, to be honest here, the past couple weeks I've been moving. I haven't had a whole lot of time to keep up with wrestling. So like, I kind of just like caught up in the last 2 weeks of NXT today. And I was not really expecting Tony D'Angelo to be the one challenging Ilya Dragunov. I still really thought Ilya was probably going to be in the mix with Trick and Mello when I woke up this morning. Anyway, so all right, let's go into another email here from JB. All right, JB, and JB has quite a few points in here, so we'll see what we can do to hit them all. So JB says, "Hi, teams. JB from Detroit. The way that Vic and Booker are clearly directed to overhype Ava is as disingenuous as it is transparent. To say that, it's no wonder Shawn Michaels had no problem making her the youngest GM in WWE history, or that young people across the world aspire to be like Ava so ridiculously beyond hyperbolic. I feel bad for Ava because I feel as though this is hurting her and it's really not her fault. Two, I'm simply not buying Roxanne as a heel. I can't pinpoint exactly what it is, but it feels as though she's still a sweet person cosplaying as a heel. It doesn't feel natural, and it seems as though she's just almost reciting lines. Even her voice doesn't feel that cutthroat or even edgy for that matter. The ambivalence of the crowd was also evident during that segment. Number three, I think tonight might be a first for me because I found myself actually agreeing with Booker. Why exactly is Mr. Stone allowing his children to be in some of his most recent feuds? It doesn't seem like the most pragmatic thing for a father to be doing. That said, should the announcers really be bringing something so glaring up when it could potentially hurt the credibility of that babyface so blatantly? Number four, something about Thea Hale just works. Her character should be corny and cringeworthy, but she's always consistently over with the crowd. She is an excitable it factor that some wrestlers have when the fans can sense their deep-seated passion for pro wrestling, similar to Liv Morgan, in my opinion. Now, this factor clearly has a ceiling, but there's always a place for it. And number five, I know that it's early in his return, but I'm not sure that Sean Spears and Ridge Holland, Sean Spears, Ridge Holland feud is doing much for anyone. I don't think they can feud for too long. I think they need to quickly transition Ridge to becoming a follower of Spears in some capacity. That story is much more potential and intrigue for both of them at this point, or both of these veterans that have returned to NXT. As always, love the show and go VIP. So quite a bit to chew on there. I guess we'll kind of break it down a little bit. So, Vic and Booker talking about Ava as being, the youngest person in youngest GM in WWE history and kind of overhyping her a little bit. It hasn't bothered me over much. Not as much as it seems to bug you, JB, which, is fine. I think probably, if you're noticing it, you're probably not the only one. So I wouldn't really want them to kind of continue to do that. Like, it could potentially hurt her credibility and things like that. You kind of get something forced down your throat like that. And you want to go the other way. So, I don't know. What about you, Bruce? Have you kind of felt that at all?
I mean, look, they're trying with her, and they're giving her the space and the time to try, but I don't know. I don't have too much to add, I guess.
Fair enough. And then Roxy is a heel. So I kind of agree
with JB. Yeah, I'm just going to disagree. I'm just going to disagree from the beginning.
I kind of agree with JB. Not 100%, but I got a lot of what JB was saying here tonight from Roxy. Like, I think it was still a good performance, but it felt like a performance to me. It didn't feel genuine. Like Trick Williams later on in the night felt genuine. I'm trying to think, like even Thea Hale for that matter, in kind of her promo, I think she went a little overboard with kind of crying about, J.C. Jane, being her best friend and a sister or whatever. But that felt a lot more genuine than what Roxanne said to me. I think she saved it in the latter half of the promo. And it started to feel a little bit better once, who was it that came out? There was somebody that came out during that segment, but,
come on, you know who it is. Come on.
Help me here. Come on. Today, Junior.
Tatum Paxley.
Thank you, Tatum Paxley.
I was trying to help guide you. Come on, man. I can't do everything for you.
Hey, sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to do everything for me. But no, she kind of saved it when Tatum Paxley came out. I felt like she kind of got a little bit more of that that edge behind her. But to JB's point, I did feel a little bit like she hasn't that she was kind of a nice person cosplaying a heel. It was the way that JB put it. I think that's a little bit kind of. That might be a little bit too far, but I definitely see his point. then he says he agrees with Booker about Mr. Stone allowing children to be involved in some of his feuds. Like, I don't know. I could see as not that I am a father or have kids or anything, but like, I guess I could see you wanting to like involve your kids in what you do. And as long as you can do it in a safe way, why not? If you're looking at it from a kayfabe perspective, like this is an actual combat sport. Yeah. He's probably kind of crazy to bring his kids into it. But, otherwise I think it's kind of fun. Thea Hale, I mean, I just kind of talked a little bit about Thea Hale. So, and we know everybody knows I'm a huge Thea Hale fan. So we go from there. And then Sean Spears, Ridge Holland, I kind of agree with JB here. Like, I like the direction of Sean Spears right now. Definitely a far cry from Ty Dillinger the last time we saw him here in NXT. So I like the fact he's been able to go out kind of like what Drew McIntyre did, go out, kind of hone his craft a little bit and come back, bigger and better. So I like that, but man, Ridge Holland, actually my roommate was sitting here watching the show with me tonight, and Ridge Holland comes out and I just looked at him. I went, and the crowd goes mild because there's no reaction for Ridge Holland. Nobody really cares. They're kind of, they're trying to push him right now and give him a story for people to latch on to. But I don't know. I can't seem to do it myself. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's definitely a far cry from what I would like to see in my main event. So I kind of agree. I'd like to see if Sean Spears is going to come back and do something big and meaningful in NXT, I'd like to see him get away from Ridge Holland sooner rather than later. Bruce on, I guess Mr. Stone, Thea Hale and, Ridge Holland and Sean Spears. Cool.
And Roxanne Perez.
I thought you said you weren't going to comment on that one.
No, that I said I wasn't going to comment on Ava.
Oh, okay.
So with Roxanne Perez, I do kind of wish Kelly was here so he can kind of be the balance between us because of his experience. But I'm just going to have to disagree. I feel like she's been doing fine. I've been liking her heel turn ever since the beginning. I've been the one who's been all the one behind it. Maybe that's why I like it so much. And, I know you weren't as thrilled with her at the beginning of her heel turn as I was, and it was more subtle than obvious. But I think especially after last week, it was, it's been going really well. And tonight, again, to me, it was, did I believe in what she was saying? That she believed what she was saying? Yes. And were her reasonings, were they actual justifiable? actually justifiable, and they were, because she still hasn't had her singles rematch for a title that she basically was stripped of a little less than a year ago at this point, based off of what Ava said. So, I think that there was more melodramatics in the first part of Thea Hale's promo tonight, way too over the top to me, and a bit, and more melodramatics in the Ridge Holland Sean Spears match than there were in Roxanne Perez's promo. So I'm going to disagree there. I'm also going to disagree on that Thea Hale bit. Like, I guess you did say she saved it in the second half a bit, because the first half, yeah, to me, was just way too much. And the second half, at least, it ended with her kind of being that spark plug, that little spitfire again. But I guess we'll get to the match. We'll talk about that. We were just more discussing that promo segment instead of the match. Holland Spears, just not invested in this feud, really. And I guess good for Sean Spears that he came in and got this victory, but what is the plan for Ridge Holland? He's been down there for a bit now. They tried to build him up. They tried to do these vignettes behind him, and there's nothing. There's really nothing for him. There's no reaction. It's just really a crowd that is apathetic toward him as a character and as a performer. And I'm not sure if, you know, if it was a competitive match, sure, but with the story they're trying to tell with him, again, I feel like the acting is a bit too over the top in the ring because of, the need for them to have to start showing the anger on his face, or Vic Joseph talking about, oh, Rich Holland is literally shaking in front of us, and how they have to show him try to get to those levels, which I think would come off better if his facial expressions weren't, you know, stoic and then furious. There's really nothing in between. So it's hard for me to really buy into this, and it makes me feel like there's just too much going on. Spears has much more range in his facial expressions, which makes this character come over a little better. But, you know, I asked last week when you weren't on the show with Kelly and myself, what is the difference between Sean Spears and Joe Gacy, essentially? Is there a need to have these two characters on the same show? And I guess we'll see how the nuances between them play out, but then it becomes a question of, are those nuances told well enough and distinct enough that they don't seem like redundancies on the show, right? So I think I missed one thing that you brought up, but I'll just leave it at that.
Sounds good to me. All right. So let's keep going here. And let's talk about our main event matchup, which was Sean Spears versus Ridge Holland. I mean, actually, I don't know. Do we have much more to say about that?
The match ended when Holland channeled his rage and went to grab the chairman's chair that he brought with him to the ring. The ref grabbed the chair out of Holland's hand. This allowed Spears to take the advantage. He went for a schoolboy, so the ref put the chair down in the corner before he could toss it out to count the pin. Then on the way up, Spears got him in a C4 into the corner, and then Holland's head and neck area landed on the chair. So there's going to be a whole story with that. If not a match, you need to take your time to go watch again if you didn't, or to watch if you missed.
Yeah, exactly. Just watch
the highlights on Twitter.
Yep, exactly. It's that's kind of it. It's kind of it. I don't really have
I'll bring
to
this up
there.
Too.
Earlier in the night,
I wrote about, this match is coming up tonight, and if I didn't have to do the report, this would be my bathroom break match. And then just before the commercial, when they when they came back from that Good Brother segment, and they Good Brothers and Hank and Tank and all of that, and then Ridge Holland made his entrance, I wrote, holy crap, I'm doing the report, and I forgot this match was coming up. Because I literally forgot this match was happening in between the time that they had that, when they hyped it earlier in the night to that point, because just no investment.
Does not surprise me. Does not surprise me at all. All right, let's keep going then. We'll go back to What's the next match? Was Kiana James and Izzy Dame versus Thea Hale and Fallon Henley. So we did talk a little bit about this as well. But so the match was supposed to be Thea Hale and Kalani Jordan. Kalani Jordan was going to be teaming up with her, as she was back, you know, basically looking for somebody to team up against James and Dame. Before the match happened, somebody had taken Kalani Jordan out backstage. She was back on the ground, clutching her knee. It was heavily implied that it was Kiana James and Izzy Dame, but never actually confirmed. And it looked like it was going to be a handicap match. Thea Hale went out there, full of piss and vinegar, like she was going to take on the world when Fallon Henley's music hit. I kind of saw this coming from a mile away once Kalani Jordan got injured. But Fallon Henley came out. We saw three, 4 weeks ago that really nice segment between Thea Hale and Fallon Henley backstage where they kind of shared a heartfelt moment, both of them kind of forlorn and upset about completely different things. But both, just being baby faces in the locker room, kind of talking about stuff. They kind of walked away with a little bit of a bond after that. So it was nice to see them follow up on that and have Fallon Henley come out and help her out. The match went 5 minutes, 53 seconds, and we did see Kiana James and Izzy Dame pick up the win after JC Jane out there with Miss Jasmine Nix. I figured I'll join the party too. Why not, guys? Somebody was going to attack attack Fallon Henley. I'm going to say it was Kiana James. I think it was Izzy Dame. Don't remember. But one of the two of them was going to attack Fallon Henley on the outside. JC Jane pulls Fallon Henley away, and they basically ran right into Thea Hale, who's kind of standing behind JC Jane.
It was an Izzy Dame big boom.
Okay, it was. All right. I thought it was Kiana James who wound up getting the win in the ring. A little bit of shenanigans there at the end. We then saw that segment that we were talking about a little bit earlier with JC Jane, Jasmine Nix, and Thea Hale, where Thea Hale's kind of like, JC, why? And then like, you know what? Care why? I'm Thea Hale and I'm back, bitch. I think she even said that actually. Decent match. Nothing necessarily to write home about, but I mean, I think it was, put on, well performed and whatnot. Just glad to see Thea Hale back, quite frankly. Anything else to say on this match, Bruce?
On the match itself, not too much. On the setup, it never made sense for Kalani Jordan to be the tag team partner. Granted, her promo earlier in the night at least gave a justification that made sense. So at this point, okay. It's just everything that happened in the weeks prior between Henley and Hale made it really weird why she would ask Kalani Jordan, not Thea Hale, right? But it was all set up so that Fallon Henley could be the savior, right, and come to her aid. Unfortunately, they lost the match, but it was all set for the story afterward where Hale basically threw away, gave this heartfelt, over-the-top, melodramatic promo about how JC was her idol. She wanted to be like her. She even changed herself to be like her, but the old Thea Hale's back, bitch, and yada, yada, yada. And now I'm wondering, I guess the thing for me here, because she also got the Chase U sign at the end, is, does Thea Hale go back to being associated with Chase U? Is she going to be in a tag team with Fallon Henley? Are both going to happen? What's the plan? What is the actual end game here between the two? Because I think it's going to be a harder thing to navigate if you try to have her between both. If you have just her doing one of them, then I think that's a lot easier to pull off. And I think what they should do is have Hale break off from Chase U and go to Henley. But then he has a story with Riley Osborne still, because it looks like now he's back to liking her again because the old one is Bill Thea Hale's back. So it's just a whole lot of things going on with Chase U, Thea Hale, and now Fallon Henley. who I do like the fact that during the match they discussed how Fallon Henley and Kiana James were the women's tag team champion just 1 year ago, and now they've been, you know, they're bitter rivals. So I think that the match itself, again, it was your standard NXT TV tag team match. You had a little bit of distraction here and there. You got the finish in the ring. You got the story told out. I just think that, for me, it's what's going to happen now between or with Hale and with Chase Yu and with Fallon Henley.
Speaking of Riley Osborne, since we're here, we did see him in the locker room looking happy as the No Quarter Catch crew approached and mocked him. We saw Osborne talking to them about because it was Charlie Dempsey holding the Heritage Cup. I'm tired, guys. I'm tired. It was Charlie Dempsey holding the Heritage Cup, Osborne basically, saying something along the lines of like he earns it, and I think he said something about like, the heritage of the UK, of the cup with the UK, he was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia, he being Charlie Dempsey, which I think is kind of funny considering Regal's his dad. And, sure, he probably was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia, but I thought it was kind of just a funny thing he threw out.
WCW, baby.
Yep. We also then saw Nathan Frazier and Axiom enter here kind of mocking the catch clause for the Heritage Cup. And they also had a nice little thing going like, whatever happened to the first champion, who was, standing right there, just, unfortunately in a mask and under a different gimmick. But I thought it was just a nice little nod to, the fact that, a kid, is still there, but not there because he's Axiom. Anything on the segment?
No. Well,
okay. I don't know why that got me so like, all right, anyway. Ariana Grace versus Gigi Dolin. And if Ariana Grace wins, Dolin becomes her protege. We did wind up seeing Ariana Grace go over in 4 minutes, 25 seconds via DQ. So, curious to see how this winds up working out. I can't imagine Gigi Dolin's going to wind up like, bending over or whatever, just because she lost via DQ. It was, via a low blow, which I don't know, kind of like I can't quite figure this one out myself. Maybe I'm missing something.
I'm sure getting kicked in the uterine area definitely hurts just as much as us getting hit in our scrotal fat.
Oh, yeah. No, I know it does. It was weird. I don't know how often I've seen that low blow of a low blow finish in a women's match before.
Not in WWE, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, props to them for going there because, that's going to hurt. I don't know exactly where they're going with this here. And again, maybe I'm missing something, but like if why would she necessarily DQ herself if she then needs to become Ariana Grace's protege? I'm curious to see where they actually go with this. I can't really think of a scenario where Gigi
I don't think
would,
she realized the ref was there, or she had just gotten hit with the low blow herself after all. So
yeah, that's true. So, but I must say I really like everything Ariana Grace is doing right now. I mean, the match itself was okay. It was, I feel like anytime Gigi Dolin's in one of them in a match, that match quality kind of suffers a little bit. But whatever.
No, it's not just that. Ariana Grace's style is a comedy style.
That's true too. That's true too. Just, I don't, it seemed like they had a couple timing issues and things throughout the match, but you know, it is what it is. What the hell was I going to say? I don't know, something about Ariana Grace. Her character work is great. Like, one of the things I noticed is she never stops making noise in the ring. She gets attacked. She's like, and you don't always hear people doing that, but she's audibly doing it. And you know, her facials are kind of over the top. She's flinging her arms all over the place and flailing whenever she gets hit. She's bumping really, like, just really good for everybody. So it's just, that character is just so over the top right now. I kind of dig it. Anything on Grace and Dolan?
I think what you're missing is that this is just going to be some high comedy vignettes in the segments between these two. Because remember, one other thing that kind of hurts is not only is Ariana Grace more of a comedy wrestler, but a comedy style, but she's also on this character trip of being a pacifist and not wanting to do violence, right? Even though she's a professional wrestler, she's okay, all that aside. She got the intended result, even though, one thing about the noises too is she never stops making facial expressions. And I love at the end how even though she's grimacing from the low blow, she kept trying to give her pageant smile and everything as being named the victor, even though she was hurting, so, you know, selling that hurt. So that was really good. To me, it's just about we're going to have some comedy segments. With Jeannie Dolan, we have discussed in the past how they were trying to push her. She just never got over with the crowd. Her match quality wasn't the greatest, as you're talking about. And I've discussed maybe she's just better as a tag team wrestler. This could be one of those oddball teams, and eventually she ends up in a tag team with Ariana Grace or just back as a tag team wrestler in general. And, you know, her and JC Jane seem like people who are better as a tag team, right? Who are better in tag teams, I should say. And if that's the case, cool, good for her. There's always a place for that in professional wrestling. So I do think that if you're still trying to build Gigi Dolan up somehow, trying to get something out of her with the crowd, this is a good way because of the connection that Ariana Grace does have with the crowd. And also, going back, Dolan did have some type of connection with the crowd coming out of Toxic Attraction, the breakup. They just weren't able to capitalize on it very much. So this could be a way to get both of them higher up the card in different ways and give them kind of a, not necessarily a character reset, but add some more legitimacy to both characters in a certain way.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. Let's talk about your man, Oba Femi. So we saw him in a match against Brooks Jensen to retain the North American Championship, 11 minutes, 43 seconds. Earlier in the night, we saw Oba Femi arriving at the arena, and Brooks Jensen kind of tried to attack him in the parking lot. We saw Josh Briggs kind of hold him back, and other officials kind of come out and, you know, pull the two of them apart. In the match itself, Josh Briggs he was watching alongside, watching along backstage. He wound up coming out to the ring to kind of watch his buddy get decimated a little bit. Unfortunately for Brooks Jensen, wasn't able to overcome, the man Oba Femi, but, I got to admit, he got a little bit more offense than I expected him to here.
That was for a reason, though. Femi was letting him get offense, essentially, just to mock him.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Femi was just laughing and smiling the entire...
That's true.
Before you get back to what you were saying, real quick, if you want to watch a match that is a match but also just a lot of storytelling, this is the match to watch from tonight.
I thought you had more than that. Okay.
Well, before you get back, I just want to put that out there before you get back to what you were going to say.
Yeah. I don't remember what I was going to say.
You're talking about Jensen got a lot more offense than you thought he was going to get.
Yeah, no, because I kind of expected this to be a bit more of a squash, but like you said, you know, they kind of went in a bit of a different direction here with this. It kind of plays into the story that I kind of, I really expected to see from, Jensen post breakup here. And that's kind of what they've been talking about. He's just lost without his buddies, without being in a tag team, without Jensen, without Henley, without Briggs, without Henley. I'm going to always do it. So yeah, like I think it makes sense. But yeah, like I said, I just, there's part of me that just really wanted to see like Femi just power through him in like, you know, a minute 30 or something like that. Cause I think they could have told the same type of a story with, you know, Jensen and Briggs that way. But yeah, like, God, it doesn't matter. The more of a Femi on TV, the better. I just want to know what's going to happen when we actually have Gunther and Oba Femi, longest reigning North American and intercontinental title holders of all time. What happens when they finally clash? It's never going to happen, not in that context, but I can dream. Oba Femi.
Yeah, Oba Femi is the coolest guy in professional wrestling. That's just, he walked in that parking lot, and he got attacked by Jensen, and he was just laughing at him. And then Briggs comes over after security separates them. He's like, "What are you doing? You got a match tonight, and whatnot." And Femi just goes, "Yeah, listen to your boy, man." Like, he's just laughing at him, completely unfazed, unimpressed, not at all intimidated by Jensen. He gets to the match, same thing. I think a lot of it also didn't make sense for Femi to give a big squash here when they've been trying to rebuild Jensen the last few weeks. He's been showing a lot more intensity, a lot more aggression, and for him to just come in and all of a sudden just get squashed might not be the best way to get this new character over. It also served to have Briggs come down, even though Jensen told him not to, and set up what looks like a stopgap feud between Oba Femi and Josh Briggs before Saturday Deliver, and that should be another hard-hitting barn burner of a match. But yeah, Oba Femi pretty much spent the entire match just laughing at and smiling at Briggs Jensen. And then once Briggs got down there, every time he would do something to Briggs, he's just smiling and staring at Josh Briggs the entire time. It was just literally like a cat playing with, and just a glee on his face. It was hilarious. It was amazing. A lot of story being told here. You know, Jensen did what he could do. He put some hard hits in there, got some offense in, but Oba Femi just literally toyed with him. He lifted him up in a belly-to-back position and literally just chucked Briggs Jensen, who's not a small dude, halfway across the ring, twice, smiling and staring at Josh Briggs. It was eerie in the best way possible for this kind of character, right? And then he hit him with a pop-up powerbomb and looked at Briggs and said, he said, "Whatever I want," and then hit another powerbomb, a regular one, and then pinned Jensen, just smiling at Briggs. And it was just, you know, I thought it was just very, very, very good storytelling. A lot of great character work from Oba Femi, but also, you know, the in-ring storytelling was done well. And what I'm not sure if you brought this up from earlier in the night when Kincaid also interviewed Oba Femi before the match happened, right before the match happened. He had the line of the night talking about Briggs Jensen. When she asked him about Briggs Jensen, he said, "Ignorant boy trying to convince himself he's ready for a challenge." And I just went, "Oh, oof, wow, that's harsh."
That was,
and then then Dijak appeared, and Femi's music hit to kind of stop that. But I'm thinking this is going to be our North American Championship match at Stand and Deliver. And that's got to be something between these two. Interestingly, Dijak is the first person I think they put Femi up against who is bigger than him in terms of height. He stood a couple inches taller, but Femi is by far the bigger person in terms of width and his body. So it's going to be interesting to see how they book that match come Stand and Deliver, because that's where it looks like we're heading. I don't think Briggs is going to be the opponent for them. I think Briggs is set up to be, you know, next week or the week after, sometime in between. Because I think there's 3 weeks between now and Stand and Deliver, or three more shows, I should say, between now and Stand and Deliver. So
that sounds right, yeah.
So, yeah, Oba Femi is just great. He had an Uranagi backbreaker, a couple of them tonight that were just vicious. Just give me more Oba Femi, more and more Oba Femi.
Do you ever watch Lost?
No, I didn't ever watch Lost.
Okay, because, man, there was this one character on Lost named Mr. Echo, and Oba Femi reminds me so much of Mr. Echo, like, in the best way possible. Mr. Echo's, like, probably my favorite character on the show, or at least one of them, anyway. And just very same demeanor, same kind of an attitude. Obafemi is like twice Mr. Echo's size, maybe not quite twice, but yeah, like it just love that character. All right, let's keep rolling here. We have Lexus King versus Mr. Stone in a singles match. We had Lexus King going over 3 minutes and 34 seconds to the coronation. I mean, yeah, this is what it is, really. You know, Von Wagner comes out afterwards to save Mr. Stone from a beatdown from Lexus King. You know, Mr. Stone got his a little bit of his stuff in to start the match off, maybe about 30, 45 seconds, you know, into the match. He was in control. And then Lexus King just took over from there. And it was really kind of what you would expect from somebody who's traditionally a manager that steps into the ring against a wrestler. So is what it is there. I still am intrigued by the story. You know, Mr. Stone, for some reason, and I can't put my finger on it, but like, I like him. Like, I really do. And I've wanted to see him, you know, succeed in you know, getting a client for years. I mean, you know, we saw him, God, I didn't even remember everybody that he's managed at this point, but Von Wagner's the first one that really, you know, obviously kind of stuck, and the kind of the bond and the friendship between the two, while comedic at times for the wrong reasons, you know, I think it's still been a fun story. I personally like the fact that he's got his kids involved. You know, I think the kids are adorable, and why not? Like, I think it's kind of a fun feel good moment for people. You know, and obviously Lexus King, I don't know if he's necessarily taking off in the way that WWE expected him to coming over from AEW, but I don't think he's a miss either. I think there might be a couple missed opportunities with him so far, but we'll kind of see what happens over the next, you know, the course of the next year or so. I'm wondering if maybe they're looking, you know, over the next year, maybe post Stand and Deliver, and, you know, after the people who go up to the main roster wind up going up to the main roster, if they wind up putting him in a bit more of a prominent spot, you know, see if he can sink or swim with it. But Lexus King versus Mr. Stone.
So I guess the Booker T part, bring up the children, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's never made sense to have children involved. But there also have been some memorable ones, of course, the big one being, you know, Eddie, Ray, Dominic, ladder match, SummerSlam 05. You also had, not that, you know, at the time, these were the cinematic match times, and I think how it played out, it worked. But you had Maxwell with Matt Hardy at the Hardy compound and all their matches, right? So it does happen. And it's at a different scale, but, you know, Steen's kids are just involved in his last match. I know they're adults. Different story. I don't know. But we have seen Shane McMahon come out with his kids to the ring before. We see a lot of camera cuts to the audience where people's families and kids and nieces and nephews and all of them are, right? So there has been a history of kids, family being involved in pro wrestling, not always to the extent that the Stone kids have, but they have been involved, right? Lexus King, he just doesn't draw me into what he's doing, right? I think his character work is fine. I'm not thrilled about his promos yet, but there's something about his offense where I'm just not quite sold on what he's doing as more than a performance, or that it's actually impactful in certain ways, right? Stone is great coming out, just trying to do as much as he can in little time, because he knows he's not going to win. He goes into these matches and he knows he's not going to win, right? Brown Breaker and Lexus King, he knows that they're the wrestlers, he's the manager, he's not going to win, but he tries to get his licks in there, right? How do I put this? It's interesting to me that all the time they've put into trying to make Von Wagner a thing, what actually made Von Wagner get over with the crowd is by having him come to the rescue of Mr. Stone multiple times. right? Like, he got a big pop tonight when he came out to save Mr. Stone. It wasn't in all these matches he was in. It wasn't all these segments that he was in. It was him coming to the aid of Mr. Stone, because Mr. Stone actually has charisma. Mr. Stone actually has a connection with the crowd that, unfortunately for Von Wagner, after all these years, he still doesn't, right? I remember when I still lived in Seattle, this was 2019, and then the pandemic hit right after, about 6 months after we moved there. But we were still talking about Von Wagner. I wasn't on the show yet, but I remember talking to y'all and emailing that, like, what is there with this guy? This is, that's, what, 5 years ago. And we're at this point where there's still not much, but what is there is the connection to Stone and how that has actually been working for him somehow, right? So the match itself, fine. It's nothing to go home about, nothing to write home about. A solid, like, 2-2.5-star TV match, maybe if that. Nothing that was awful, right? You get the coronation from King. I think Stone bumped well. And then he went for the second one, which set up Von Wagner, saved. But I like how King didn't leave the ring. He just kind of threw Stone to Wagner, and Wagner just kind of walked off with him. King just stayed in the ring and kind of laughed off. Too much recently, we've seen King be that weaselly heel trying to escape everything, and here he showed some more confidence. Yeah, it's Mr. Stone that he just beat, but he didn't leave the ring when the bigger dude came out and ran down to the ring, right? He stood his ground, he stayed there, and he showed no intimidation in the face of Von Wagner, which, okay, it's Von Wagner, I'm kidding. But I thought that was a step in the right direction for this character. His straitjacket neckbreaker, swinging neckbreaker, the coronation, I just feel like he can still get a little more snap to it than he's getting. And I think then I would be more believable of his offense and more believable of his finisher. But, you know, at least they're getting time and it's working for Von Wagner. And Mr. Stone is showing, again, what kind of a valuable asset he is to NXT. And when it comes to King, they're still invested in him, so I guess you're going to be along for the ride and see just what ends up happening with him. If, you know, if he's still at this level, come Great American Bash, I don't think he's going to, he might just be stuck at this level in NXT, even though his pedigree would kind of indicate that he would be higher. But, yeah, sometimes it just doesn't translate all the way, and even then it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have a bad career. They just might not reach the heights of their predecessor, their progenitor, but, you know, they at least have a space and have a career, which not all second generation or third generation people in wrestling get.
All right. Bronco Nima and Lucien Price versus Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro in a tag match to see who's going to enter the
number one contender match.
Yeah, that. Thank you. we did see the LWO go over here 10 minutes, 45 seconds. I thought this was a really fun match, to be honest with you. A great match to start the show. Fun, kind of explosive. OTM, that got some crazy power. I think it might have been Wild, but it might have been Del Toro, I forget. But, like, both Nima and Price, you know, they're standing outside the ring. They grab whoever it was, either Wild or Del Toro, I don't remember, from the outside and just chucked him over the top rope from the outside. It was Wild. Okay, I couldn't remember.
Toss from the ground to over the top rope.
That was insane. Like, I mean, I've seen that before, but, like, I could watch that a million times. It's just a crazy feat of strength. I think OTM looked really good here. LWO obviously looked really good here as well. I'm torn on the winners of this match, because, like, I like the LWO. I like, you know, former members of Legado del Fantasma here. Like, you know, and so cool to see them get the win. Plus, they're also main roster, so, you know, kind of makes sense. Like, they've got that main roster advantage, kind of maybe a couple extra 2K stat points, if you will. But OTM, they're the newer guys. I feel like they really haven't won any of their bigger matches yet. The only matches they've really won have been your kind of enhancement matches or showcase matches to kind of show them off. So I was kind of hoping to see OTM go over here, and you know, maybe start building them up a little bit. Not that I necessarily could see them quite yet at this point, you know, dethroning Breaker and Corbin for the tag titles. But I mean, I feel like just given the TV time that they've gotten, and kind of the characters that they portray, I think it would be nice to see them kind of go on like, maybe not like an undefeated streak for a little bit, but I mean, at least get some dominant wins, you know, in the near future. But yeah, Bruce on the LWO and OTM.
So the reason I didn't like this winner is because last week, before we knew what teams were involved, I just randomly said, I'm going to pick OTM to be the winners to dethrone Wolf Dogs at Stand and Deliver because I can't think of another team right now, and I want to see them be champion. And my prediction's already blown up, and yeah. No, the match was fine. Yeah, well, the match was fun. There was one spot that I really didn't like, and Bronco Neem was really late on a rush into the corner. Del Toro had already gone to their apron, but Neema still ran and bumped as if Del Toro had just moved away. But that aside, yeah, it was fun. Good match. Again, I think my big question is now, what is the point with OTM? They honestly could be one of those teams because of the characters, because of their size, where they might not be long for NXT. They might, after Stand and Deliver, they might show up on Raw or SmackDown as another stable team. I think Jada Parker, yeah, she could definitely use more work, but I think she's still at a level where if they go as a stable, she won't have to be relied upon to be a singles wrestler too much, or at least yet, right? And when she does get to that point, she's had all this time to help to work more on her game and whatnot. And I think she's fine in the ring. I like what she does in the ring, and her character work is definitely there. And this stable as a group definitely has a lot of character, all that character work down. They definitely have charisma to them. So I wouldn't be surprised if the reason why they lost here is because they're really not meant to be on NXT very long. And if they're not meant to be on NXT very long, why put them in a position to potentially win the tag team championship, right? So, yes, they did go against the family, I believe it was, several months ago, one of the few defenses the family had. Yeah. But if you don't, that was months ago, right? And if you see their progression, you're like, you know what, we could use a team like that. You know, essentially, you can compare them to an AOP type in NXT, right? The big hulking bruisers. A little more athleticism than AOP, in my opinion. At least with Lucian Price, you got more speed with him. But they kind of have that same style to them, right? So you can put them on SmackDown. I think they'll be fine as a group, as a stable. It just goes back to the discussion we had earlier about the Good Brothers, Hank and Tank, Nathan Fraser, Axiom. Who am I missing? Oh, No Quarter Catch Crew. Like, and with the No Quarter Catch Crew, which two members is it going to be, right? We don't even know that. So it's just, I think the men's tag team division right now, whereas we're talking about the women's tag team division, how they keep building up teams, pairing and getting them together, I think the men's tag team division is kind of muddled because, one, LWO, while they have a connection, is more of a Raw SmackDown team now. Good Brothers, wow, keep forgetting their name, DLC, as they kept calling them tonight, too. They are more of a Raw tag team, right, or a SmackDown tag team, wherever AJ Styles was at, Meechan's at. And then you have Baron Corbin, who was a Raw SmackDown person for years before coming back down. So I feel like what is hindering the tag team division a bit, on the men's side at least, is the fact that you have some of these wrestlers who you aren't sure if they're going to be around for a long time or if they're just here as a stopgap measure. And I feel like they just had a small tournament too where LWO lost. The whatever tournament led to the Wolf Dogs becoming the number one contender or whatever, like they lost, LWO lost in that tournament too, right? So it feels like they're more there to put over whoever in the triple threat match for number one contender, which I guess at this point looks like it's going to be the OC.
All right, and let's see. We've got two more segments here to talk about. But they kind of blend together. They both involve the family. So we have the family at an Italian restaurant welcoming Luca Crisafino into the family and naming him the consigliere of the family. Basically kind of family just kind of talking about business and things like that. When we see Ilya Dragunov walk into the room, at that point, everybody kind of scatters and leaves the Don. And I say scatters, they, you know, kind of casually get up and walked away, leaving the Don of NXT and the champion together at the table. The Don said, you know, remember, the Don likes you. And that's when Luca and Stax attacked Ilya from behind, dragged him away, and essentially, you know, nice good old mob kidnapping, if you will. And at that end of that segment, we saw them come back, get at the bridge where they, supposedly, allegedly murdered Two Dimes, like a year and a half ago. D'Angelo basically said, Dragunov go. They kind of just had a little bit of a back and forth from there. They ended up kind of driving away with and leaving Dragunov at the bridge. I thought this was kind of a fun segment, like a little bit of a callback to some older times at the bridge with, you know, Two Dimes and things like that. It's certainly not the story I thought we would be hearing coming in to Stand and Deliver. I didn't think we'd see Tony D'Angelo like in a potential main event spot at Stand and Deliver, although I'm hoping, I think we're all hoping that Trick and Mello get that main event spot, but still, you know, a spot challenging for the NXT title. There's even part of me that thinks that he's got the potential to win it. I think it's a low, you know, small percentage, but, you know, there's a potential for Ilya to maybe drop the title and go up. I've heard, who was it? I think it was actually, I was talking with Wade about that. No, it was Kelly. Kelly and I were talking about that on the post SmackDown show, this past Friday. There's, you know, the potential for Ilya to go up. And so maybe we do get a quick run with Tony D'Angelo on top in NXT. I don't know how I necessarily feel about that, but, I like the character. Being an Italian and I've always kind of liked, you know, mob movies and The Godfather, Goodfellas, things like that. So, you know, I like the character and everything, but like, you know, as a wrestler, I think Tony D'Angelo is, you know, mid card, at least where, you know, he's kind of been, you know, currently. So I'm not super over the moon about, you know, potential NXT title run out of Tony D'Angelo, but I, at the same time, I think it could work. You know, the Dawn of NXT could kind of be almost like a watered down bloodline angle. I mean, you know, kind of what the bloodline is, right?
They don't murder people off bridges and whatnot, but
well, no, that's true. They just, you know, interfere.
They just murder their stories.
Murder their stories and interfere in every single match that everybody else in the bloodline's involved in. But yeah, on these two segments, Bruce.
Trying to think of how I should go about this. So I think I'll start from the end and go backwards, right? I like the callback to when they took out Troy Donovan, Two Dimes, and then D'Angelo talking about how he's had many walks there with people and he walked back alone. Making us think that something's going to happen dragging off, but then saying, no, you're fine. You'll be fine, but just letting you know that I'm taking that title from you, come Stand and Deliver, and leaving dragging off to kind of stew as he looks out over the bridge and contemplates the words that D'Angelo gave him. Now, back to the restaurant segment, I think this was a good way to formally introduce Luca Crisafino to the crowd. I know he's been in different segments before, specifically the one with Dijak and Gacy in the interrogation room, and I know he's had a match or two before on the show, but now I feel like he's formally been introduced into NXT because he's been one of these big vignette segments where he was actually named fully. I know that Dijak yelled at him, Crucifino, but you get the full name, you get an association. Those sirens are not for me. Otherwise, they would have been that you would still be hearing them. And the thing that happened with Dragunov coming in, well, you know, Rizzo said everyone back in, I think she said Brooklyn, is happy and cheering for him, and they'll be there for him and whatnot, for D'Angelo as a number one contender. But after Dragunov came in and they had a little talk, you know, he got abducted, and D'Angelo basically told him when they got on the bridge, I'm not sure if he said this, but you can't just walk into my establishment unannounced, uninvited, thing. Nothing's going to happen to you, right? So while, okay, sure, that is still technically a felony that you just committed on camera, right? So that aside, at least now, what I wrote is, at least now we have some heat being built to this match that isn't just Tony D'Angelo won a number one contenders match. There's actually something built underneath or on top of, I guess, that first layer of he won a number one contenders match. You have something between the two that is driving them and now is making it more personal. And at least they are using the weeks between the match last week, so the full, about a month between last week and Stand and Deliver, to develop this sort of, if not rivalry, at least animosity between the two, to where you go into the match and you legitimately believe that they're trying to beat each other, not just put on a performance, right? So I do appreciate that. Now, do I think D'Angelo's going to walk out as champion? Honestly, I think it's a safer bet that he does than he doesn't at this point, because I also have heard read rumors that people are very high on Ilya Dragunov inside and outside of NXT. And there is the situation, of course, that can happen where if you move both Hayes and Dragunov, especially if they end up on the same show, where you can't find time for either. And there's also Breaker already moving. So there is a chance that that can happen. But with some of the stars from the past 10 to 15 years getting higher in age, having more on the bump card, maybe not being full-time as much anymore, you're going to have some spots open up, and you can use that time to build up people like Juggernaut, like Hayes, like Breaker.
But, or Dante Chen.
I mean, it's amazing to me that Dante Chen hasn't already been the one to break Roman Reigns' streak, but whatever. That's another whole issue. When it comes to Dragunov, we've discussed how Valkyria, you know, I've been long saying, like, Valkyria's run to me has been bland. I'm not really into it. Going back to everything with Becky Lynch, just have not been into that. I'm glad Roxanne Perez brought up the whole Becky Lynch thing too and kind of called her out tonight. Dragunov as well, it's not that I think he's been bland, it's that I feel like he's been 2-1-0 in his championship run. And there just hasn't been enough layers to me. It's always my family this, my championship that. I get really, really angry and red-faced. There we go. I will die in the ring, all that stuff, right? I just feel like I, as a viewer, as a recapper, as someone who also analyzes the show, doesn't get time to really build levels with Dragunov. I don't really get to take that journey with him, right? It's more of I'm at a 12 out of 10 at all times kind of thing. So to me, having a different champion wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. I'm just not quite sold on it being Tony D'Angelo. Now, I will say he's always had a good connection with the crowd. His character work is fine. And his stuff in the ring has been getting better. He has been adding a little more aggression, a little more snap to his offense in the ring. So there is that. But when I watch him in the ring, do I look at him and I say, oh, that is a top-tier champion right there. Now, again, that hasn't always had to be the case, right? Great Khali, for example, was never like that. Jinder Mahal was not a great in-ring performer. There have been people throughout the years who have not been. Jack Swagger was not, to me, a great in-ring performer. He had the amateur stuff down, but in terms of professional wrestling, I was not wowed by what he did in the ring, right? So that's not necessarily a factor to say, oh, you can't make him champion. But I just don't know if you go from Hayes to Dragunov to D'Angelo, if that's kind of it, one stands out as not being kind of in the right grouping, right?
Now, which one of these things is not like the other?
The other, exactly. Now, if D'Angelo ends up being a transitional tour trick, okay, fine. You get him his moment at Stand and Deliver. You get both of them their moments at Stand and Deliver. And then you move it on to trick and you go from there. Okay, fine. But I'm just not quite sold right now. Maybe in the next 3 weeks. Maybe in the next 3 weeks. They'll do more with D'Angelo, make me think, okay, now I see it. But as of right now, I don't see it, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he does come out of Stand and Deliver as champion.
And with that, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show, guys. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can check out the things I do at natelindberg.com. Thanks for sticking around with us tonight, talking NXT. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. Find me at B_Lee253. And my report for tonight's show up at the Torch on the VIP side.
All right, like I said, if you haven't checked out last week's SmackDown Post show, Kelly and I, we filled in for Wade, so we got to talk with all you guys about SmackDown. It's always fun to talk about a different brand every so often because, you know, we talk a lot of NXT on this show because I guess that's what we do. But as Kelly would say, we'll see you in 7. Take care.